KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
When you think of famous literary adolescents, the characters Huck Finn and Holden Caulfield come immediately to mind. The most recent addition to this distinguished lineage is young William Tice, growing up near a river in the rural Midwest without a mother or father. William is the protagonist and narrator of the new novel A Key to Treehouse Living by Elliot Reed, published by Portland-based Tin House Books. Elliot grew up in the American Midwest in the Czech Republic. He earned his MFA from the University of Florida in Gainesville, studying under Paget Powell, and he now lives in Spokane, Washington. A Key to Treehouse Living is Elliot's first novel, and we're fortunate to have him live on the phone with us now, calling in from somewhere on the road. Elliot, welcome to KBOO.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Elliot, in the intro, we mentioned two famous literary adolescents, Huck Finn, Holden Caulfield, who both come to mind, my mind at least, when I read A Key to Treehouse Living. And I should mention, your professor in the MFA program at the University of Florida, Paget Powell, wrote a famous book called The Disto that also features a first-person teenage narrator. Were these major influences on the novel?
Yes, I was certainly reading Paget Powell and Simmons Maginot from Edisto. It's an unforgettable voice. He was somewhere in the back of my mind, for sure.
I read a previous interview where you mentioned several other characters. You mentioned a children's book, I think, that affected you quite a bit in the writing, influenced the writing of the book.
Yes, so that was, I believe it's called Andrew Henry's Meadow. Is that the one?
I think that was it, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great book. It's about these kids that establish a town out in the middle of the woods, somewhere outside of where they're living at the time, because people don't understand them, I guess. It's a great book. It's just mostly drawings, though. But I think somehow, that was very impactful, just the drawings.
I read also, it might have been the same interview, you said the title of the novel, of course, is A Key to Treehouse Living, but you said the original title was The Glossary of William Tice, the main character. What was the reason for the title change and the significance of going from the term glossary, which is the structure of the book, to the term key?
That's an excellent question. I mean, so it's not exactly a glossary, and it's not exactly an encyclopedia, and it's not exactly a dictionary, but it's some sort of homemade reference manual to some very specific kind of existence or kind of purpose. And what that might be, I guess a key was something that popped up in discussing what was this thing. It's a novel, it's a story, it's a lot of stories, but it has this strange form which emerged organically. I don't know how exactly that began, but it's a key. It's a way that helps this person exist. This is how William exists. These are the things that he needs, the topics that are most important to him, and the terms that define his existence. So if you, for him, using these words to understand his reality, that's like the key to his reality, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, I should explain to listeners, Elliot, that the book is structured as a series of these terms, and they're in alphabetical order somewhat, at least starting with A and going all the way to Y. There's no Z in there. And
right.
There's a story, not necessarily a definition, connected with each term. As you kind of implied there, it's definitely not your traditional novel structure. And you had a great, you have an entry in there actually towards the end, because it's under U, called Unorthodox Methods, which seems to explain it quite a bit. I'll just quote it here. To write a story in alphabetical order is unorthodox, but if you're trying to tell a lot of stories all at once, and you're trying to tell them for a lot of different reasons, you just resort to unorthodox methods, which I think is kind of sums up the book quite a bit right there.
Yeah, and so stories that are told in unorthodox fashion, I think, are the most interesting. And I mean, how do you tell a story in an orthodox fashion anyway? So everyone is going to tell their story in this certain way. And I think that's something that I'm fascinated by and something that influenced the way this book is written. Because how you might describe a certain term in your life, I might describe that same term differently because the facts of my life and my history and what I hold in my mind and these moments of significance will change the way that I will describe the term. So part of the, yeah, I mean, does that, before I go on, that, is that answering your question?
Oh, it does. And in fact, what I was thinking of is this method, it works so well because I think it's really William coming to terms with his life. No pun intended. That was unintentional there.
But, right.
It reminded me of something, Elliot. My sister was a high school special ed teacher for a long time. She said she once had an autistic student who, when he was overwhelmed by school or life in general, for that matter, he would say, "Can we make a list?" And it seems the glossary or the key here that your protagonist William keeps in the book comes from a similar place. It's a way of him dealing with this overwhelming amount of sadness, loneliness, the absence of his parents, the somewhat questionable behavior of his uncle.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're definitely onto it there. I mean, if you have a lot of things going on, it's good to make a list. And, I mean, I've been on the road for like a month, and I got married yesterday or 2 days ago.
Oh, congratulations.
And we planned the wedding ourselves, basically, and planning this book tour. And so there's just so much in your mind, and it's just like it's this almost psychedelic whirlwind of things going on and possible results and outcomes that could drive you crazy. And if you just got to sit down and take, you know, write a list of things, what's this thing that needs to happen? What's this next thing that needs to happen? It's a sensible, maybe the most sensible and practical form of writing. And I think that's what makes this book, one of the things that makes this book so interesting is that it's written for a purpose. It's a practical writing. William is writing this because he has to, otherwise he couldn't go on existing.
I kind of alluded to that, the overwhelming facts of his life. At the heart of the book, of course, is the absence of his mother, who's dead, and his father, who ran away. He's vanished. I would normally have you read this, but I don't know if you have the book in front of you, so I'll read it. But I think there's two glossary entries in here help shed a little light on it. The first one is appropriately called absence, and that's actually the very first one in the book. And I quote, "A woman becomes a mother when a baby comes out of her body. From then on, she can never stop being a mother. No matter how much or how little mothering she does, she will still be a mother. If a bird lays an egg in a nest, flies off, and never returns, the bird will still be a mother if the egg she laid hatches. Not all mothers want to be with their children." Extremely sad, and that's the first paragraph in the book. And then the second one I wanted to read comes a little later under F, of course. It's the entry, "Fallacy. A fallacy is something you believe to be true, but which is not actually a fact, and believing which brings disaster, ... It's a fallacy that you love someone if you say you love them, but then you run away." And there he's talking in those two entries about his mother and his father.
Yeah. Well, Ken, you have a great reading voice. So you also read two kind of bummer passages. That the book has a lot of those, but it also has passages that are full of wonderment and optimism despite these adverse situations in which he exists. But the first one especially that you read, absence, I've heard about fiction that you're trying to write as truly as possible. So talking about like the definition of a mother as truly as possible, I feel that is the most true way for this character, at least. I think that what might be really interesting about this book for a lot of readers is that their own understanding of what a mother is and their definition of a mother could push up against William's idea of a mother, and then you're forced to compare your experience with his experience in this really direct conversational way, almost. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes, yes. I should add, too, as you pointed out, that even though these are almost invariably sad passages here, you know, based on William's experience as pretty much an orphan, even though his father is somewhere, he's just not around William, you balance that with humor in the book and kind of a joyful wonder at life. There's a lot of really good entries in there. There's even a glossary entry called Wonder, by the way. And in a previous interview, you said... when you follow William as he makes connections to a world in which he seems to be a foreigner, you should absolutely feel empowered. People screw him over, forget about him a lot, but he'd rather write about the ways he keeps moving forward. You even quoted the Dalai Lama there about a way of who's been through a lot of misfortune in his life, and he seems to have overcome it. So I really should point that out. There's a lot of joy in the book.
Yeah, and I definitely. I think there's, for me, there's a lot of joy in... interesting facts. And for instance, you know, we're driving along the coast here and I look out where there's a lot of great white sharks and thinking that, yeah, a great white shark is a fish. This is, to me, this is a, when I think about that, this is a, it creates this bizarre sense of wonder that is humorous and joyous for me. And I feel that, you know, what's happening when people read this is showing me that, like, there's a lot of dictionary readers out there, people who just read facts because having these, an understanding of terms that have an inherent weirdness. Okay, a great white shark is a fish, but so is a betta fish. They're both fish. Something there is bizarre and weird and wonderful.
And there's a few passages in the book about betta fishes. Well, yes. William seems to have an attachment to them.
Right. Definitely.
Now, we talked a little bit about the influence of Huckleberry Finn. It's hard not to on the book with, you know, a kind of an adolescent narrating it. And, you know, in Huckleberry Finn, Huck lights out for the territory. And here William, quote, strikes out into the wilderness. About halfway through, he takes off downriver on a raft after his uncle, who's kind of sheltering him after his parents are gone, is sent to jail. And I won't give away too much in the way of details there. That was a difficult connection to make. Were you concerned that that was playing a little too much on Huckleberry Finn? I know you mentioned in previous interviews the influence of the river, particularly the Missouri River, on you.
Yeah. So let's see. I mean, well, I was writing it right next to the river. I was living in this place that was just overlooking the river. The space that I was in was, you know, it was this interesting place on the edge of the woods where they were making these identical McMansions out of the woods and carving down the trees and putting these mansions up. So there was that image out my window, and then there was down the hill the river. And at a certain point, it just happened that this kid had to get on the river. And I once asked Paget, who was one of my early readers, Paget Powell, I'm like, so does it, this kid gets on a river, have I adequately justified the reasoning behind getting on a river? And maybe this was I was too concerned with, was I writing well? Was I writing something that was interesting? We're asking these MFA type and workshop questions. Is it justifiable? Is this character's actions justifiable? And his response very simply was like, no, kids just get on rivers.
Well, we'll leave it with that, Ellie. We've got to wrap up. But thanks very much for talking with us. I know it's been a long day. You're traveling. You just got married, as you said, a day or so ago, and you're on a reading tour.
Yes, I'll be at Powell's reading very soon.
Oh, yes, and I'll give the details on that. Again, thank you, Elliot. We've been talking with Elliot Reed, author of the new novel, A Key to Treehouse Living, from Tin House Books. And as mentioned, you can see Elliot in conversation with Portland writer Arthur Bradford at Powell's City of Books. That's a downtown location on West Burnside. That's this Thursday, September 20th at 7:30 p.m. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go.